She looked extremely anxious. "Harry, I've been thinking. You know what we've got to do, don't you? Straight away, the moment we get back to the castle."
"Yeah, give Ron a good kick up the..."
"Write to Sirius. You've got to tell him what's happened. He asked you to keep him posted on everything that's going on at Hogwarts. It's almost as if he expected something like this to happen. I brought some parchment and a quill out with me."
"Come off it," said Harry, looking around to check that they couldn't be overheard, but the grounds were quite deserted. "He came back to the country just because my scar twinged. He'll probably come bursting right into the castle if I tell him someone's entered me in the Triwizard Tournament."
"He'd want you to tell him," said Hermione sternly. "He's going to find out anyway."
"How?"
"Harry, this isn't going to be kept quiet," said Hermione very seriously. "This tournament's famous, and you're famous. I'll be really surprised if there isn't anything in the Daily Prophet about you competing. You're already in half the books about you-know-who, you know, and Sirius would rather hear it from you. I know he would."
"Okay, okay, I'll write to him," said Harry, throwing his last piece of toast into the lake. They both stood and watched it floating there for a moment, before a large tentacle rose out of the water and scooped it beneath the surface. Then they returned to the castle. "Whose owl am I going to use?" Harry said as they climbed the stairs. "He told me not to use Hedwig again."
"Ask Ron if you can borrow..."
"I'm not asking Ron for anything," Harry said flatly.
"Well, borrow one of the school owls, then. Anyone can use them," said Hermione.
They went up to the owlry. Hermione gave Harry a piece of parchment, a quill, and a bottle of ink, then strolled around the long lines of perches, looking at all the different owls, while Harry sat down against a wall and wrote his letter. "Dear Sirius, you told me to keep you posted on what's happening at Hogwarts, so here goes. I don't know if you've heard, but the Triwizard Tournament's happening this year, and on Saturday night I got picked as a fourth champion. I don't know who put my name in the Goblet of Fire, because I didn't. The other Hogwarts champion is Cedric Diggory from Hufflepuff." He paused at this point, thinking. He had an urge to say something about the large weight of anxiety that seemed to have settled inside his chest since last night, but he couldn't think how to translate this into words, so he simply dipped his quill back into the ink bottle and wrote, "Hope you're okay, and Buckbeak, Harry." "Finished," he told Hermione, getting to his feet and brushing straw off his robes. At this, Hedwig came fluttering down onto his shoulder and held out her leg.
"I can't use you," Harry told her, looking around for the school owls. "I've got to use one of these."
Hedwig gave a very loud hoot and took off so suddenly that her talons cut into his shoulder. She kept her back to Harry all the time he was tying his letter to the leg of a large barn owl. When the barn owl had flown off, Harry reached out to stroke Hedwig, but she clicked her beak furiously and soared up into the rafters out of reach.
"First Ron, then you," said Harry angrily. "This isn't my fault."
If Harry had thought that matters would improve once everyone got used to the idea of him being champion, the following days showed him how mistaken he was. He could no longer avoid the rest of the school once he was back at lessons, and it was clear that the rest of the school, just like the Gryffindors, thought Harry had entered himself for the tournament. Unlike the Gryffindors, however, they did not seem impressed. The Hufflepuffs, who were usually on excellent terms with the Gryffindors, had turned remarkably cold toward the whole lot of them. One herbology lesson was enough to demonstrate this. It was plain that the Hufflepuffs felt that Harry had stolen their champion's glory, a feeling exacerbated perhaps by the fact that Hufflepuff House very rarely got any glory, and that Cedric was one of the few who had ever given them any, having beaten Gryffindor once at Quidditch. Ernie Macmillan and Justin Finch-Fletchley, with whom Harry normally got on very well, did not talk to him, even though they were repotting bouncing bulbs at the same tray, though they did laugh rather unpleasantly when one of the bouncing bulbs wriggled free from Harry's grip and smacked him hard in the face. Ron wasn't talking to Harry either. Hermione sat between them, making very forced conversation, but though both answered her normally, they avoided making eye contact with each other. Harry thought even Professor Sprout seemed distant with him. But then she was head of Hufflepuff House. He would have been looking forward to seeing Hagrid under normal circumstances, but care of magical creatures meant seeing the Slytherins too, the first time he would come face to face with them since becoming champion. Predictably, Malfoy arrived at Hagrid's cabin with his familiar sneer firmly in place.
"Ah, look, boys, it's the champion," he said to Crabbe and Goyle the moment he got within earshot of Harry. "Got your autograph books. Better get a signature now, because I doubt he's going to be around much longer. Half the Triwizard champions have died. How long do you reckon you're going to last, Potter? 10 minutes into the first task's my bet."
Crabbe and Goyle guffawed sycophantically, but Malfoy had to stop there, because Hagrid emerged from the back of his cabin, balancing a teetering tower of crates, each containing a very large, blast-ended scroot. To the class's horror, Hagrid proceeded to explain that the reason the scroots had been killing one another was an excess of pent-up energy, and that the solution would be for each student to fix a leash on a scroot and take it for a short walk. The only good thing about this plan was that it distracted Malfoy completely.
"Take this thing for a walk?" he repeated in disgust, staring into one of the boxes. "And where exactly are we supposed to fix the leash? Around the sting, the blasting end, or the sucker?"
"Round the middle," said Hagrid, demonstrating. "You might want to put on your dragonhide gloves, just as an extra precaution. Like, Harry, you come here and help me with this big one."
Hagrid's real intention, however, was to talk to Harry away from the rest of the class. He waited until everyone else had set off with their scroots, then turned to Harry and said, very seriously,
"So, you're competing, Harry, in the tournament, school champion."
"One of the champions," Harry corrected him. Hagrid's beetle-black eyes looked very anxious under his wild eyebrows.
"No idea who put you in for it, Harry."
"You believe I didn't do it, then?"
said Harry, concealing with difficulty the rush of gratitude he felt at Hagrid's words.
"Course I do," Hagrid grunted. "You said it wasn't you, and I believe you, and Dumbledore believe you and all."
"Wish I knew who did do it," said Harry bitterly.
The pair of them looked out over the lawn. The class was widely scattered now, and all in great difficulty. The scroots were now over 3 feet long and extremely powerful. No longer shellless and colourless, they had developed a kind of thick, greyish, shiny armour. They looked like a cross between giant scorpions and elongated crabs, but still without recognisable heads or eyes. They had become immensely strong and very hard to control.
"Look like they're having fun, don't they?"
Hagrid said happily. Harry assumed he was talking about the scroots, because his classmates certainly weren't. Every now and then, with an alarming bang, one of the scroots' ends would explode, causing it to shoot forward several yards, and more than one person was being dragged along on their stomach, trying desperately to get back on their feet.
"Arr, I don't know, Harry,"
Hagrid sighed, suddenly looking back down at him with a worried expression on his face.
"School champion. Everything seems to happen to you, doesn't it?"
Harry didn't answer. Yes, everything did seem to happen to him. That was more or less what Hermione had said as they had walked around the lake, and that was the reason, according to her, that Ron was no longer talking to him. The next few days were some of Harry's worst at Hogwarts. The closest he had ever come to feeling like this had been during those months in his second year, when a large part of the school had suspected him of attacking his fellow students. But Ron had been on his side then. He thought he could have coped with the rest of the school's behaviour if he could just have had Ron back as a friend. But he wasn't going to try to persuade Ron to talk to him if Ron didn't want to. Nevertheless, it was lonely, with dislike pouring in on him from all sides. He could understand the Hufflepuff's attitude, even if he didn't like it. They had their own champion to support,
He expected nothing less than vicious insults from the Slytherins. He was highly unpopular there and always had been, because he had helped Gryffindor beat them so often, both at Quidditch and in the Interhouse Championship. But he had hoped the Ravenclaws might have found it in their hearts to support him as much as Cedric. He was wrong, however. Most Ravenclaws seemed to think that he had been desperate to earn himself a bit more fame by tricking the goblet into accepting his name. Then there was the fact that Cedric looked the part of a champion so much more than he did. Exceptionally handsome, with his straight nose, dark hair, and grey eyes, it was hard to say who was receiving more admiration these days, Cedric or Victor Crumb. Harry actually saw the same six-year girls who had been so keen to get Crumb's autograph begging Cedric to sign their school bags one lunchtime. Meanwhile, there was no reply from Sirius. Hedwig was refusing to come anywhere near him. Professor Trelawney was predicting his death with even more certainty than usual, and he did so badly at summoning charms in Professor Flitwick's class that he was given extra homework. The only person to get any, apart from Neville.
"It's really not that difficult, Harry,"
Hermione tried to reassure him as they left Flitwick's class. She had been making objects zoom across the room to her all lesson, as though she were some sort of weird magnet for board dusters, waste paper baskets, and lunoscopes.
"You just weren't concentrating properly."
"Wonder why that was," said Harry darkly, as Cedric Diggory walked past, surrounded by a large group of simpering girls, all of whom looked at Harry as though he were a particularly large blast-ended scroot. "So, never mind, eh? Double potions to look forward to this afternoon." Double potions was always a horrible experience, but these days it was nothing short of torture. Being shut in a dungeon for an hour and a half with Snape and the Slytherins, all of whom seemed determined to punish Harry as much as possible for daring to become school champion, was about the most unpleasant thing Harry could imagine. He had already struggled through one Friday's worth, with Hermione sitting next to him intoning,
"Ignore them, ignore them, ignore them,"
under her breath, and he couldn't see why today should be any better. When he and Hermione arrived at Snape's dungeon after lunch, they found the Slytherins waiting outside, each and every one of them wearing a large badge on the front of his or her robes. For one wild moment, Harry thought they were SPEW badges. Then he saw that they all bore the same message in luminous red letters that burnt brightly in the dimly lit underground passage. "Support Cedric Diggory, the real Hogwarts champion."
"Like them, Potter?" said Malfoy loudly as Harry approached. "And this isn't all they do. Look."
He pressed his badge into his chest, and the message upon it vanished, to be replaced by another one which glowed green. "Potter stinks." The Slytherins howled with laughter. Each of them pressed their badges too, until the message "Potter stinks" was shining brightly all around Harry. He felt the heat rise in his face and neck.
"Oh, very funny,"
Hermione said sarcastically to Pansy Parkinson and her gang of Slytherin girls, who were laughing harder than anyone.
"Really witty."
Ron was standing against the wall with Dean and Seamus. He wasn't laughing, but he wasn't sticking up for Harry either.
"Want one, Granger?"
said Malfoy, holding out a badge to Hermione.
"I've got loads. But don't touch my hand now. I've just washed it, you see. Don't want a mudblood sliming it up."
Some of the anger Harry had been feeling for days and days seemed to burst through a dam in his chest. He had reached for his wand before he'd thought what he was doing. People all around them scrambled out of the way, backing down the corridor.
"Harry!"
Hermione said warningly.
"Go on then, Potter,"
Malfoy said quietly, drawing out his own wand.
"Moody's not here to look after you now. Do it, if you've got the guts."
For a split second, they looked into each other's eyes. Then, at exactly the same time, both acted.
"Fanunculus!"
Harry yelled.
"Densogio!"
screamed Malfoy. Jets of light shot from both wands, hit each other in midair, and ricocheted off at angles. Harry's hit Goyle in the face, and Malfoy's hit Hermione. Goyle bellowed and put his hands to his nose, where great ugly boils were springing up. Hermione, whimpering in panic, was clutching her mouth.
"Hermione!"
Ron had hurried forward to see what was wrong with her. Harry turned and saw Ron dragging Hermione's hand away from her face. It wasn't a pretty sight. Hermione's front teeth, already larger than average, were now growing at an alarming rate. She was looking more and more like a beaver as her teeth elongated past her bottom lip toward her chin. Panic-stricken, she felt them and let out a terrified cry.
"And what is all this noise about?" said a soft, deadly voice.
Snape had arrived. The Slytherins clamoured to give their explanations. Snape pointed a long yellow finger at Malfoy and said,
"Explain."
"Potter attacked me, sir."
"We attacked each other at the same time," Harry shouted.
"And he hit Goyle. Look."
Snape examined Goyle, whose face now resembled something that would have been at home in a book on poisonous fungi.
"Hospital wing, Goyle," Snape said calmly.
"Malfoy got Hermione," Ron said. "Look!" He forced Hermione to show Snape her teeth. She was doing her best to hide them with her hands, though this was difficult, as they had now grown down past her collar. Pansy Parkinson and the other Slytherin girls were doubled up with silent giggles, pointing at Hermione from behind Snape's back. Snape looked coldly at Hermione, then said,
"I see no difference."
Hermione let out a whimper. Her eyes filled with tears. She turned on her heel and ran all the way up the corridor and out of sight. It was lucky, perhaps, that both Harry and Ron started shouting at Snape at the same time. Lucky their voices echoed so much in the stone corridor, for in the confused din it was impossible for him to hear exactly what they were calling him. He got the gist, however.
"Let's see,"
he said in his silkiest voice.
50 points from Gryffindor, and a detention each for Potter and Weasley. Now get inside, or it'll be a week's worth of detentions."
Harry's ears were ringing. The injustice of it made him want to curse Snape into 1,000 slimy pieces. He passed Snape, walked with Ron to the back of the dungeon, and slammed his bag down onto the table. Ron was shaking with anger, too. For a moment it felt as though everything was back to normal between them. But then Ron turned and sat down with Dean and Seamus instead, leaving Harry alone at his table. On the other side of the dungeon, Malfoy turned his back on Snape and pressed his badge, smirking. "Potter stinks," flashed once more across the room. Harry sat there staring at Snape as the lesson began, picturing horrific things happening to him. If only he knew how to do the Cruciatus curse, he'd have Snape flat on his back like that spider, jerking and twitching.
"Antidotes,"
said Snape, looking around at them all, his cold black eyes glittering unpleasantly.
"You should all have prepared your recipes now. I want you to brew them carefully, and then we will be selecting someone on whom to test one."
Snape's eyes met Harry's, and Harry knew what was coming. Snape was going to poison him. Harry imagined picking up his cauldron and sprinting to the front of the class and bringing it down on Snape's greasy head. And then a knock on the dungeon door burst in on Harry's thoughts. It was Colin Creevy. He edged into the room, beaming at Harry, and walked up to Snape's desk at the front of the room.
"Yes,"
said Snape curtly.
"Please, sir, I'm supposed to take Harry Potter upstairs."
Snape stared down his hooked nose at Colin, whose smile faded from his eager face.
"Potter has another hour of potions to complete," said Snape coldly. "He will come upstairs when this class is finished."
Colin went pink.
Sir, Mr. Bagman wants him,"
he said nervously.
"All the champions have got to go. I think they want to take photographs."
Harry would have given anything he owned to have stopped Colin saying those last few words. He chanced half a glance at Ron, but Ron was staring determinedly at the ceiling.
Very well, Snape snapped. "Potter, leave your things here. I want you back down here later to test your antidote."
"Please, sir,"
"'He's got to take his things with him,' squeaked Colin. "'All the champions!'
"'Very well!' said Snape. "'Potter, take your bag and get out of my sight!'
Harry swung his bag over his shoulder, got up, and headed for the door. As he walked through the Slytherin desks, Potter Stinks flashed at him from every direction. "'It's amazing, isn't it, Harry?' said Colin, starting to speak the moment Harry had closed the dungeon door behind him. "'Isn't it, though? You, being champion!'
"'Yeah, really amazing,' said Harry heavily as they set off toward the steps into the entrance hall.
"'What do they want photos for, Colin?'
"'The Daily Prophet, I think.'
"'Great,' said Harry dully. "'Exactly what I need. More publicity.'
"'Good luck,'
said Colin, when they had reached the right room. Harry knocked on the door and entered. He was in a fairly small classroom. Most of the desks had been pushed away to the back of the room, leaving a large space in the middle. Three of them, however, had been placed end to end in front of the blackboard and covered with a long length of velvet. Five chairs had been set behind the velvet-covered desks, and Ludo Bagman was sitting in one of them, talking to a witch Harry had never seen before, who was wearing magenta robes. Victor Crumb was standing moodily in a corner as usual, and not talking to anybody. Cedric and Fleur were in conversation. Fleur looked a good deal happier than Harry had seen her so far. She kept throwing back her head so that her long silvery hair caught the light. A paunchy man, holding a large black camera that was smoking slightly, was watching Fleur out of the corner of his eye. Bagman suddenly spotted Harry, got up quickly, and bounded forward.
"'Ah, here he is! Champion number four! In you come, Harry, in you come! Nothing to worry about. It's just the wand-weighing ceremony. The rest of the judges will be here in a moment.'
"'Wand-weighing?' Harry repeated nervously.
"'We have to check that your wands are fully functional, no problems, you know, as they're your most important tools in the tasks ahead,' said Bagman. "'The expert's upstairs now with Dumbledore, and then there's going to be a little photo shoot. This is Rita Skeeter,' he added, gesturing toward the witch in magenta robes. "'She's doing a small piece on the tournament for the Daily Prophet.'
"'Maybe not that small, Ludo,' said Rita Skeeter, her eyes on Harry. Her hair was set in elaborate and curiously rigid curls that contrasted oddly with her heavy-jawed face. She wore jewelled spectacles. The thick fingers clutching her crocodile-skin handbag ended in 2-inch nails painted crimson.
"'I wonder if I can have a little word with Harry before we start,' she said to Bagman, but still gazing fixedly at Harry. "'The youngest champion, you know, to add a bit of colour.'
"'Certainly,' cried Bagman. "'That is, if Harry has no objection.'
Said Harry.
"'Lovely,'
said Rita Skeeter, and in a second her scarlet-taloned fingers had Harry's upper arm in a surprisingly strong grip, and she was steering him out of the room again and opening a nearby door.
"'We don't want to be in there with all that noise,' she said. "'Let's see. Ah, yes. This is nice and cosy.'
It was a broom cupboard. Harry stared at her.
"'Come along, dear. That's right. Lovely,' said Rita Skeeter again, perching herself precariously upon an upturned bucket,
pushing Harry down onto a cardboard box and closing the door, throwing them into darkness.
"'Let's see now.'
She unsnapped her crocodile-skin handbag and pulled out a handful of candles, which she lit with a wave of her wand and magicked into mid-air, so that they could see what they were doing.
"'You won't mind, Harry, if I use a quick quotes quill? It leaves me free to talk to you normally.'
"'A what?' said Harry. Rita Skeeter's smile widened. Harry counted 3 gold teeth. She reached again into her crocodile bag and drew out a long acid-green quill and a roll of parchment, which she stretched out between them on a crate of Mrs. Scour's all-purpose magical mess remover. She put the tip of the green quill into her mouth, sucked it for a moment with apparent relish, then placed it upright on the parchment, where it stood balanced on its point, quivering slightly.
"'Testing! My name is Rita Skeeter, Daily Prophet Reporter.'
Harry looked down quickly at the quill. The moment Rita Skeeter had spoken, the green quill had started to scribble, skidding across the parchment. Attractive blonde Rita Skeeter, 43, whose savage quill has punctured many inflated reputations.
"'Lovely,' said Rita Skeeter yet again, and she ripped the top piece of parchment off, crumpled it up, and stuffed it into her handbag.
Now she leaned towards Harry and said, "So, Harry, what made you decide to enter the Tri-Wizard Tournament?" Said Harry again, but he was distracted by the quill. Even though he wasn't speaking, it was dashing across the parchment, and in its wake he could make out a fresh sentence. "An ugly scar, souvenir of a tragic past, disfigures the otherwise charming face of Harry Potter, whose eyes..." "Ignore the quill, Harry," said Rita Skeeter firmly. Reluctantly, Harry looked up at her instead. "Now, why did you decide to enter the tournament, Harry?"
"I didn't," said Harry. "I don't know how my name got into the Goblet of Fire. I didn't put it there."
Rita Skeeter raised one heavily penciled eyebrow.
"Come now, Harry. There's no need to be scared of getting into trouble. We all know you shouldn't really have entered at all, but don't worry about it. Our readers love a rebel."
"But I didn't enter," Harry repeated. "I don't know who."
"How do you feel about the tasks ahead?" said Rita Skeeter. "Excited? Nervous?"
"I haven't really thought."
"Yeah, nervous, I suppose," said Harry. His insides squirmed uncomfortably as he spoke.
"Champions have died in the past, haven't they?" said Rita Skeeter briskly. "Have you thought about that at all?"
"Well, they say it's going to be a lot safer this year," said Harry.
The quill whizzed across the parchment between them, back and forward, as though it was skating.
"Of course, you've looked death in the face before, haven't you?"
said Rita Skeeter, watching him closely.
"How would you say that's affected you?"
Said Harry yet again.
"Do you think that the trauma in your past might have made you keen to prove yourself, to live up to your name? Do you think that perhaps you were tempted to enter the Tri-Wizard Tournament because..."
"I didn't enter," said Harry, starting to feel irritated.
"Can you remember your parents at all?"
said Rita Skeeter, talking over him.
"No," said Harry. "How do you think they'd feel if they knew you were competing in the Tri-Wizard Tournament? Proud? Worried? Angry?"
Harry was feeling really annoyed now. How on earth was he to know how his parents would feel if they were alive? He could feel Rita Skeeter watching him very intently. Frowning, he avoided her gaze and looked down at the words the quill had just written. Tears filled those startlingly green eyes as our conversation turns to the parents he can barely remember.
"I have not got tears in my eyes," said Harry loudly.
Before Rita Skeeter could say a word, the door of the broom cupboard was pulled open. Harry looked around, blinking in the bright light. Albus Dumbledore stood there, looking down at both of them, squashed into the cupboard.
"Dumbledore!"
cried Rita Skeeter with every appearance of delight, but Harry noticed that her quill and the parchment had suddenly vanished from the box of magical mess remover, and Rita's clawed fingers were hastily snapping shut the clasp of her crocodile skin bag.
"How are you?"
she said, standing up and holding out one of her large, mannish hands to Dumbledore.
"I hope you saw my piece over the summer about the International Confederation of Wizards Conference."
"Enchantingly nasty," said Dumbledore, his eyes twinkling. "I particularly enjoyed your description of me as an obsolete dingbat."
Rita Skeeter didn't look remotely abashed.
"I was just making the point that some of your ideas are a little old-fashioned, Dumbledore, and that many wizards in the street..."
"I will be delighted to hear the reasoning behind the rudeness, Rita," said Dumbledore, with a courteous bow and a smile. "But I'm afraid we will have to discuss the matter later. The weighing of the wands is about to start, and it cannot take place if one of our champions is hidden in a broom cupboard."
Very glad to get away from Rita Skeeter, Harry hurried back into the room. The other champions were now sitting in chairs near the door, and he sat down quickly next to Cedric, looking up at the velvet-covered table where four of the five judges were now sitting: Professor Karkaroff, Madame Maxime, Mr. Crouch, and Ludo Bagman. Rita Skeeter settled herself down in a corner. Harry saw her slip the parchment out of her bag again, spread it on her knee, suck the end of the quick quotes quill, and place it once more on the parchment.
"May I introduce Mr. Ollivander?"
said Dumbledore, taking his place at the judge's table and talking to the champions.
"He will be checking your wands to ensure that they are in good condition before the tournament."
Harry looked around, and with a jolt of surprise saw an old wizard with large, pale eyes standing quietly by the window. Harry had met Mr. Ollivander before. He was the wand-maker from whom Harry had bought his own wand over 3 years ago in Diagon Alley.
"Mademoiselle Delacour, could we have you first, please?"
said Mr. Ollivander, stepping into the empty space in the middle of the room. Fleur Delacour swept over to Mr. Ollivander and handed him her wand. He said. He twirled the wand between his long fingers like a baton, and it emitted a number of pink and gold sparks. Then he held it close to his eyes and examined it carefully.
"Yes," he said quietly. 9.5 inches, inflexible, rosewood, and containing, dear me, an air from the head of a villa,"
said Fleur.
"One of my grandmothers."
So Fleur was part villa, thought Harry, making a mental note to tell Ron. Then he remembered that Ron wasn't speaking to him.
"Yes,"
said Mr. Ollivander.
"Yes, I've never used Vila hair myself, of course. I find it makes for rather temperamental ones. However, to each his own, and if this suits you..."
Mr. Ollivander ran his fingers along the wand, apparently checking for scratches or bumps. Then he muttered,
"Orchideus!"
And a bunch of flowers burst from the wand tip.
"Very well, very well. It's in fine working order,"
said Mr. Ollivander, scooping up the flowers and handing them to Fleur with her wand.
"Mr. Diggory, you next."
Fleur glided back to her seat, smiling at Cedric as he passed her.
"Ah, now this is one of mine, isn't it?"
said Mr. Ollivander, with much more enthusiasm, as Cedric handed over his wand.
"Yes, I remember it well, containing a single hair from the tail of a particularly fine male unicorn. Must have been 17 hands. Nearly gored me with his horn after I plucked his tail. 12.25 inches. Ash, pleasantly springy. It's in fine condition. You treat it regularly?"
"Polished it last night," said Cedric, grinning. Harry looked down at his own wand. He could see finger marks all over it. He gathered a fistful of robe from his knee and tried to rub it clean surreptitiously. Several gold sparks shot out of the end of it. Fleur Delacour gave him a very patronizing look, and he desisted. Mr. Ollivander sent a stream of silver smoke rings across the room from the tip of Cedric's wand, pronounced himself satisfied, and then said,
"Mr. Crumb, if you please..."
Victor Crumb got up and slouched round-shouldered and duck-footed toward Mr. Ollivander. He thrust out his wand and stood scowling, with his hands in the pockets of his robes.
Said
Mr. Ollivander.
"This is a Gregorovitch creation, unless I'm much mistaken. A fine wand-maker, though the styling is never quite what I... However..."
He lifted the wand and examined it minutely, turning it over and over before his eyes.
"Yes, hornbeam and dragon heartstring,"
he shot at Crumb, who nodded.
"Rather thicker than one usually sees. Quite rigid. 10.25 inches. Avis!"
The hornbeam wand let off a blast like a gun, and a number of small twittering birds flew out of the end and through the open window into the watery sunlight.
"Good,"
said Mr. Ollivander, handing Crumb back his wand.
"Which leaves Mr. Potter."
Harry got to his feet and walked past Crumb to Mr. Ollivander. He handed over his wand.
"Ah, yes,"
said Mr. Ollivander, his pale eyes suddenly gleaming.
"Yes, yes, yes. How well I remember."
Harry could remember, too. He could remember it as though it had happened yesterday. 4 summers ago, on his 11th birthday, he had entered Mr. Ollivander's shop with Hagrid to buy a wand. Mr. Ollivander had taken his measurements and then started handing him wands to try. Harry had waved what felt like every wand in the shop until at last he had found the one that suited him, this one, which was made of holly, 11 inches long, and contained a single feather from the tail of a phoenix. Mr. Ollivander had been very surprised that Harry had been so compatible with this wand.
"Curious,"
he had said.
"Curious."
And not until Harry asked what was curious
Had Mr. Ollivander explained that the phoenix feather in Harry's wand had come from the same bird that had supplied the core of Lord Voldemort's? Harry had never shared this piece of information with anybody. He was very fond of his wand, and as far as he was concerned, its relation to Voldemort's wand was something it couldn't help, rather as he couldn't help being related to Aunt Petunia. However, he really hoped that Mr. Ollivander wasn't about to tell the room about it. He had a funny feeling Rita Skeeter's quick quotes quill might just explode with excitement if he did. Mr. Ollivander spent much longer examining Harry's wand than anyone else's. Eventually, however, he made a fountain of wine shoot out of it and handed it back to Harry, announcing that it was still in perfect condition.
"Thank you all," said Dumbledore, standing up at the judge's table. "You may go back to your lessons now, or perhaps it would be quicker just to go down to dinner, as they are about to end."
Feeling that at last something had gone right today, Harry got up to leave, but the man with the black camera jumped up and cleared his throat.
"Photos, Dumbledore, photos!" cried Bagman excitedly. "All the judges and champions, what do you think, Rita?"
Yes, let's do those first," said Rita Skeeter, whose eyes were upon Harry again, "and then perhaps get some individual shots."
The photographs took a long time. Madame Maxime cast everyone else into shadow wherever she stood, and the photographer couldn't stand far enough back to get her into the frame. Eventually, she had to sit while everyone else stood around her. Karkaroff kept twirling his goatee around his finger to give it an extra curl. Crumb, whom Harry would have thought would have been used to this sort of thing, skulked, half-hidden at the back of the group. The photographer seemed keenest to get Fleur at the front, but Rita Skeeter kept hurrying forward and dragging Harry into greater prominence. Then she insisted on separate shots of all the champions. At last, they were free to go. Harry went down to dinner. Hermione wasn't there. He supposed she was still in the hospital wing having her teeth fixed. He ate alone at the end of the table, then returned to Gryffindor Tower, thinking of all the extra work on summoning charms that he had to do. Up in the dormitory, he came across Ron.
"You've had an owl," said Ron brusquely the moment he walked in. He was pointing at Harry's pillow. The school barn owl was waiting for him there.
"Oh, right," said Harry.
"And we've got to do our detentions tomorrow night. Snape's dungeon," said Ron.
He then walked straight out of the room, not looking at Harry. For a moment, Harry considered going after him. He wasn't sure whether he wanted to talk to him or hit him. Both seemed quite appealing. But the lure of Sirius's answer was too strong. Harry strode over to the barn owl, took the letter off its leg, and unrolled it.
"Harry, I can't say everything I would like to in a letter. It's too risky in case the owl is intercepted. We need to talk face to face. Can you ensure that you are alone by the fire in Gryffindor Tower at 1 o'clock in the morning on the 22nd of November? I know better than anyone that you can look after yourself, and while you're around Dumbledore and Moody, I don't think anyone will be able to hurt you. However, someone seems to be having a good try. Entering you in that tournament would have been very risky, especially right under Dumbledore's nose. Be on the watch, Harry. I still want to hear about anything unusual. Let me know about the 22nd of November as quickly as you can. Sirius."
Chapter 19. The Hungarian Horntail. The prospect of talking face-to-face with Sirius was all that sustained Harry over the next fortnight, the only bright spot on a horizon that had never looked darker. The shock of finding himself school champion had worn off slightly now, and the fear of what was facing him had started to sink in. The first task was drawing steadily nearer. He felt as though it were crouching ahead of him like some horrific monster barring his path. He had never suffered nerves like these. They were way beyond anything he had experienced before a Quidditch match, not even his last one against Slytherin, which had decided who would win the Quidditch Cup. Harry was finding it hard to think about the future at all. He felt as though his whole life had been leading up to, and would finish with, the first task. Admittedly, he didn't see how Sirius was going to make him feel any better about having to perform an unknown piece of difficult and dangerous magic in front of hundreds of people, but the mere sight of a friendly face would be something at the moment. Harry wrote back to Sirius saying that he would be beside the common room fire at the time Sirius had suggested, and he and Hermione spent a long time going over plans for forcing any stragglers out of the common room on the night in question. If the worst came to the worst, they were going to drop a bag of dung bombs, but they hoped they wouldn't have to resort to that. Filch would skin them alive. In the meantime, life became even worse for Harry within the confines of the castle, for Rita Skeeter had published her piece about the Tri-Wizard Tournament, and it had turned out to be not so much a report on the tournament as a highly coloured life story of Harry. Much of the front page had been given over to a picture of Harry. The article, continuing on pages 2, 6, and 7, had been all about Harry. The names of the Beaubatons and Durmstrang champions, misspelt, had been squashed into the last line of the article, and Cedric hadn't been mentioned at all. The article had appeared 10 days ago, and Harry still got a sick, burning feeling of shame in his stomach every time he thought about it. Rita Skeeter had reported him saying an awful lot of things that he couldn't remember ever saying in his life, let alone in that broom cupboard. "I suppose I get my strength from my parents. I know they'd be very proud of me if they could see me now. Yes, sometimes at night I still cry about them. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I know nothing will hurt me during the tournament because they're watching over me." But Rita Skeeter had gone even further than transforming his errs into long, sickly sentences. She had interviewed other people about him, too. "Harry has at last found love at Hogwarts. His close friend, Colin Creevy, says that Harry is rarely seen out of the company of one Hermione Granger, a stunningly pretty, muggle-born girl who, like Harry, is one of the top students in the school." From the moment the article had appeared, Harry had had to endure people, Slytherins mainly, quoting it at him as he passed and making sneering comments.
"Want a hanky, Potter, in case you start crying in Transfiguration? Since when have you been one of the top students in the school, Potter? Or is this a school you and Longbottom have set up together?"
"Hey, Harry."
"Yeah, that's right,"
Harry found himself shouting as he wheeled around in the corridor, having had just about enough.
"I've just been crying my eyes out over my dead mum, and I'm just off to do a bit more."
"No, it was just... you dropped your quill."
It was Cho. Harry felt the colour rising in his face.
"Oh, right. Sorry,"
he muttered, taking the quill back.
Good luck on Tuesday," she said. "I really hope you do well."
Which left Harry feeling extremely stupid. Hermione had come in for her fair share of unpleasantness, too, but she hadn't yet started yelling at innocent bystanders. In fact, Harry was full of admiration for the way she was handling the situation.
"Stunningly pretty, her!"
Pansy Parkinson had shrieked the first time she had come face to face with Hermione after Rita's article had appeared.
"What was she judging against? A chipmunk?"
"Ignore it,"
Hermione said in a dignified voice, holding her head in the air and stalking past the sniggering, slithering girls as though she couldn't hear them.
"Just ignore it, Harry."
But Harry couldn't ignore it. Ron hadn't spoken to him at all since he had told him about Snape's detentions. Harry had half hoped they would make things up during the 2 hours they were forced to pickle rats' brains in Snape's dungeon, but that had been the day Rita's article had appeared, which seemed to have confirmed Ron's belief that Harry was really enjoying all the attention. Hermione was furious with the pair of them. She went from one to the other, trying to force them to talk to each other, but Harry was adamant. He would talk to Ron again, only if Ron admitted that Harry hadn't put his name in the Goblet of Fire and apologized for calling him a liar.
"I didn't start this," Harry said stubbornly. "It's his problem."
"You miss him,"
Hermione said impatiently,
"and I know he misses you."
"Miss him?" said Harry. "I don't miss him."
But this was a downright lie. Harry liked Hermione very much, but she just wasn't the same as Ron. There was much less laughter and a lot more hanging around in the library when Hermione was your best friend. Harry still hadn't mastered summoning charms. He seemed to have developed something of a block about them, and Hermione insisted that learning the theory would help. They consequently spent a lot of time poring over books during their lunchtimes. Victor Crumb was in the library an awful lot, too, and Harry wondered what he was up to. Was he studying, or was he looking for things to help him through the first task? Hermione often complained about Crumb being there. Not that he ever bothered them, but because groups of giggling girls often turned up to spy on him from behind bookshelves, and Hermione found the noise distracting.
"He's not even good-looking,"
she muttered angrily, glaring at Crumb's sharp profile. "They only like him because he's famous. They wouldn't look twice at him if he couldn't do that wonky faint thing."
"Wronsky faint," said Harry through gritted teeth.
Quite apart from liking to get Quidditch terms correct, it caused him another pang to imagine Ron's expression if he could have heard Hermione talking about wonky feints. It is a strange thing, but when you are dreading something and you would give anything to slow down time, it has a disobliging habit of speeding up. The days until the first task seemed to slip by as though someone had fixed the clocks to work at double speed. Harry's feeling of barely controlled panic was with him wherever he went, as ever-present as the snide comments about the Daily Prophet article. On the Saturday before the first task, all students in the third year and above were permitted to visit the village of Hogsmeade. Hermione told Harry that it would do him good to get away from the castle for a bit, and Harry didn't need much persuasion.
"What about Ron, though?" he said. "Don't you want to go with him?" "Oh, well..."
Hermione went slightly pink.
"I thought we might meet up with him in the Three Broomsticks."
"No," said Harry flatly.
"Oh, Harry, this is so stupid. I'll come, but I'm not meeting Ron, and I'm wearing my invisibility cloak." "Oh, all right, then," Hermione snapped. "But I'd hate talking to you in that cloak. I never know if I'm looking at you or not."
So Harry put on his invisibility cloak in the dormitory, went back downstairs, and together he and Hermione set off for Hogsmeade. Harry felt wonderfully free under the cloak. He watched other students walking past them as they entered the village, most of them sporting "Support Cedric Diggory" badges, but no horrible remarks came his way for a change, and nobody was quoting that stupid article.
"People keep looking at me now," said Hermione grumpily as they came out of Honey Duke's sweet shop later, eating large cream-filled chocolates. "They think I'm talking to myself."
"Don't move your lips so much, then."
"Come on, please, just take off your cloak for a bit. No one's going to bother you here."
"Oh, yeah?" said Harry. "Look behind you." Rita Skeeter and her photographer friend had just emerged from the Three Broomsticks pub. Talking in low voices, they passed right by Hermione without looking at her. Harry backed into the wall of Honeydukes to stop Rita Skeeter from hitting him with her crocodile skin handbag. When they were gone, Harry said,
"She's staying in the village. I bet she's coming to watch the first task."
As he said it, his stomach flooded with a wave of molten panic. He didn't mention this. He and Hermione hadn't discussed what was coming in the first task much. He had the feeling she didn't want to think about it.
"She's gone," said Hermione, looking right through Harry toward the end of the street. "Why don't we go and have a butterbeer in the Three Broomsticks? It's a bit cold, isn't it?"
"You don't have to talk to Ron," she added irritably, correctly interpreting his silence. The Three Broomsticks was packed, mainly with Hogwarts students enjoying their free afternoon, but also with a variety of magical people Harry rarely saw anywhere else. Harry supposed that as Hogsmeade was the only all-wizard village in Britain, it was a bit of a haven for creatures like hags, who were not as adept as wizards at disguising themselves. It was very hard to move through crowds in the invisibility cloak, in case you accidentally trod on someone, which tended to lead to awkward questions. Harry edged slowly toward a spare table in the corner, while Hermione went to buy drinks. On his way through the pub, Harry spotted Ron, who was sitting with Fred, George, and Lee Jordan. Resisting the urge to give Ron a good, hard poke in the back of the head, he finally reached the table and sat down at it. Hermione joined him a moment later and slipped him a butter beer under his cloak.
"I look like such an idiot sitting here on my own," she muttered. "Lucky I brought something to do."
And she pulled out a notebook in which she had been keeping a record of SPEW members. Harry saw his and Ron's names at the top of the very short list. It seemed a long time ago that they had sat making up those predictions together, and Hermione had turned up and appointed them secretary and treasurer.
"You know, maybe I should try and get some of the villagers involved in SPEW,
Hermione said thoughtfully, looking around the pub.
"Yeah, right,"
said Harry. He took a swig of butterbeer under his cloak.
"Hermione, when are you going to give up on this spew stuff?"
"When house elves have decent wages and working conditions," she hissed back. "You know, I'm starting to think it's time for more direct action. I wonder how you get into the school kitchens."
"No idea. Ask Fred and George," said Harry.
Hermione lapsed into thoughtful silence while Harry drank his butterbeer, watching the people in the pub. All of them looked cheerful and relaxed. Ernie McMillan and Hannah Abbott were swapping chocolate frog cards at a nearby table, both of them sporting Support Cedric Diggory badges on their cloaks. Right over by the door he saw Cho and a large group of her Ravenclaw friends. She wasn't wearing a Cedric badge, though. This cheered up Harry very slightly. What wouldn't he have given to be one of these people, sitting around, laughing and talking, with nothing to worry about but homework? He imagined how it would have felt to be here if his name hadn't come out of the Goblet of Fire. He wouldn't be wearing the invisibility cloak, for one thing. Ron would be sitting with him. The three of them would probably be happily imagining what deadly dangerous task the school champions would be facing on Tuesday. He'd have been really looking forward to it, watching them do whatever it was, cheering on Cedric with everyone else, safe in a seat at the back of the stands. He wondered how the other champions were feeling. Every time he had seen Cedric lately, he had been surrounded by admirers and looking nervous but excited. Harry glimpsed Fleur Delacour from time to time in the corridors. She looked exactly as she always did, haughty and unruffled. And Crumb just sat in the library, poring over books. Harry thought of Sirius, and the tight, tense knot in his chest seemed to ease slightly. He would be speaking to him in just over 12 hours, for tonight was the night they were meeting at the common room fire, assuming nothing went wrong, as everything else had done lately.
"Look! It's Hagrid!"
said Hermione. The back of Hagrid's enormous shaggy head, he had mercifully abandoned his bunches, emerged over the crowd. Harry wondered why he hadn't spotted him at once, as Hagrid was so large, but, standing up carefully, he saw that Hagrid had been leaning low, talking to Professor Moody. Hagrid had his usual enormous tankard in front of him, but Moody was drinking from his hip flask. Madame Rose Murta, the pretty landlady, didn't seem to think much of this. She was looking askance at Moody as she collected glasses from tables around them. Perhaps she thought it was an insult to her mulled mead, but Harry knew better. Moody had told them all during their last Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson that he preferred to prepare his own food and drink at all times, as it was so easy for dark wizards to poison an unattended cup. As Harry watched, he saw Hagrid and Moody get up to leave. He waved, then remembered that Hagrid couldn't see him. Moody, however, paused, his magical eye on the corner where Harry was standing. He tapped Hagrid in the small of the back, being unable to reach his shoulder, muttered something to him, and then the pair of them made their way back across the pub toward Harry and Hermione's table.
"All right, Hermione," said Hagrid loudly.
"Hello," said Hermione, smiling back.
Moody limped around the table and bent down. Harry thought he was reading the SPEW notebook until he muttered, "Nice cloak, Potter." Harry stared at him in amazement. The large chunk missing from Moody's nose was particularly obvious at a few inches distance. Moody grinned.
Can you...
"Yeah. It can see through invisibility cloaks," Moody said quietly. "And it's come in useful at times, I can tell you."
Hagrid was beaming down at Harry, too. Harry knew Hagrid couldn't see him, but Moody had obviously told Hagrid he was there.
Hagrid now bent down on the pretext of reading the SPEW notebook as well, and said in a whisper so low that only Harry could hear it,
"Harry, meet me tonight at midnight at me cabin. Wear that cloak."
Straightening up, Hagrid said loudly,
"Nice to see you, Hermione,"
winked, and departed. Moody followed him.
"Why does Hagrid want me to meet him at midnight?" Harry said, very surprised.
"Does he?" said Hermione, looking startled. "I wonder what he's up to. I don't know whether you should go, Harry."
She looked nervously around and hissed,
"It might make you late for Sirius."
It was true that going down to Hagrid's at midnight would mean cutting his meeting with Sirius very fine indeed. Hermione suggested sending Hedwig down to Hagrid's to tell him he couldn't go, always assuming she would consent to take the note, of course. Harry, however, thought it better just to be quick at whatever Hagrid wanted him for. He was very curious to know what this might be. Hagrid had never asked Harry to visit him so late at night. At 11:30 that evening, Harry, who had pretended to go up to bed early, pulled the invisibility cloak back over himself and crept back downstairs through the common room. Quite a few people were still in there. The Creevy brothers had managed to get hold of a stack of Support Cedric Diggory badges and were trying to bewitch them to make them say Support Harry Potter instead. So far, however, all they had managed to do was get the badges stuck on Potter Stinks. Harry crept past them to the portrait hole and waited for a minute or so, keeping an eye on his watch. Then Hermione opened the fat lady for him from outside as they had planned. He slipped past her with a whispered, "Thanks," and set off through the castle. The grounds were very dark. Harry walked down the lawn toward the lights shining in Hagrid's cabin. The inside of the enormous Beaubaton's carriage was also lit up. Harry could hear Madame Maxime talking inside it as he knocked on Hagrid's front door.
"You there, Harry?"
Hagrid whispered, opening the door and looking around.
"Yeah,"
said Harry, slipping inside the cabin and pulling the cloak down off his head.
"What's up?"
"Got summat to show you," said Hagrid.
There was an air of enormous excitement about Hagrid. He was wearing a flower that resembled an oversized artichoke in his buttonhole. It looked as though he had abandoned the use of axle grease, but he had certainly attempted to comb his hair. Harry could see the comb's broken teeth tangled in it.
"What are you showing me?"
Harry said warily, wondering if the Scroots had laid eggs, or Hagrid had managed to buy another giant three-headed dog off a stranger in a pub.
"Come with me. Keep quiet. And keep yourself covered with that cloak," said Hagrid. "We won't take Fang. He won't like it."
"Listen, Hagrid, I can't stay long. I've got to be back up at the castle by 1 o'clock.
But Hagrid wasn't listening. He was opening the cabin door and striding off into the night. Harry hurried to follow and found, to his great surprise, that Hagrid was leading him to the Beaubaton's carriage.
"Hagrid, what—"
"Shh," said Hagrid. And he knocked 3 times on the door bearing the crossed golden wands. Madame Maxime opened it. She was wearing a silk shawl wrapped around her massive shoulders. She smiled when she saw Hagrid.
"Ah, Hagrid, it is time." "Bonsoir,"
said Hagrid, beaming at her and holding out a hand to help her down the golden steps. Madame Maxime closed the door behind her. Hagrid offered her his arm, and they set off around the edge of the paddock containing Madame Maxime's giant winged horses, with Harry, totally bewildered, running to keep up with them. Had Hagrid wanted to show him Madame Maxime? He could see her any old time he wanted. She wasn't exactly hard to miss. But it seemed that Madame Maxime was in for the same treat as Harry was, because after a while she said, playfully,
"Where is it you are taking me, Hagrid?"
"You'll enjoy this," said Hagrid gruffly. "Worth seeing, trust me. Only, don't go telling anyone I showed you, right? You're not supposed to know."
"Of course not,"
said Madame Maxime, fluttering her long black eyelashes. And still they walked, Harry getting more and more irritated as he jogged along in their wake, checking his watch every now and then. Hagrid had some harebrained scheme in hand which might make him miss Sirius. If they didn't get there soon,
He was going to turn around, go straight back to the castle, and leave Hagrid to enjoy his moonlit stroll with Madame Maxime. But then, when they had walked so far around the perimeter of the forest that the castle and the lake were out of sight, Harry heard something. Men were shouting up ahead. Then came a deafening, ear-splitting roar. Hagrid led Madame Maxime around a clump of trees and came to a halt. Harry hurried up alongside them. For a split second, he thought he was seeing bonfires and men darting around them. And then his mouth fell open.
Dragons!
4 fully grown, enormous, vicious-looking dragons were rearing onto their hind legs,